This is Phil Farrand. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. And this is, I'm getting almost up to 3 months worth of being semi-retired. And I'm slowly kind of settling in. I'm settling in to all the new timings and how life is transpiring, and it's good, all is well. I'm sort of learning to say, well, that's it for this week, and then just walking away. But everything's going fine. It's all going fine. This week at work, we had, it was called PI planning, and I don't know what that stands for, but it's getting projects organized and setting up for the new sprints, and the project manager and the leaders go and talk to the stakeholders and say, what's your top priorities? And then we come back and we figure out how much it's going to take to get those top priorities taken care of, and we assign potential numbers to everything, and then they put together the plans and say, this is what we think we're going to work on. And then I'm not there for the final part of it, which is to go around and poll the team and say, what's your confidence level that we can get this done, and blah, 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 blah. But it's very interesting. It's very, very interesting. Lots of fun. And it's good. I think it's really good. You know, it's getting organized and getting much more organized than we have ever been with a methodology and with an approach. And I think it's good. So that was literally 3 days. That was pretty much my entire week. We were in the same room for the entire week, going over projects, figuring out what needed to be done, figuring out how much time it would take, etc., etc., etc. And I felt like I made, you know, some contributions. So it was a good week. I'm waiting for books to come in, the book 23 to come in. In the meantime, I have gotten started with book 24. That seems to be going fine. I'm just easing my way back into it because technically I don't have to start the sprint for book 24 until October 1st, but I'm getting myself ahead. And I've got it started, which, you know, I think that's fine. And what's happened so far is fine. I'm in like chapter 2, so I'm not that far. Really at 12,000 words, 14,000 words, somewhere in there. It's not much to begin with, but that's okay. This is the last book, and I should know where I'm going by this point, so that's all fine. I've got all of the costume stuff in for Petrov Day tomorrow, so that's all good. I did have just a lovely interaction, last Friday. I was having breakfast with my buddy, Dave, at Cracker Barrel, and I had Aiden with me, and we were talking, and this lovely couple walked up and introduced themselves, and I think called me by name. I was in my pirate costume, because it was Talk Like a Pirate Day, and we started talking, and if I remember the story correctly, they were coming from Pennsylvania. They were going to Branson. And the husband, Ken, he actually listens to my podcast. And I told him, I said, well, I think you're one of three. And we laughed and carried on. And we visited for a little bit. And he introduced his wife, Joy, to me. And we just had just a lovely time and interaction, and he said he had heard on the podcast that I go to Cracker Barrel every morning and every Friday morning, and so they were coming through, and he said, well, let's just drop into Cracker Barrel, maybe we get a chance to meet Phil. So they came in, we took pictures, you know, we chatted, he friended me on Facebook, I told him how much I enjoyed meeting him and his lovely wife Joy, and it was just lovely. It was just lovely. So that's fun. Anyways, so that's good. The writing's good. The costumes are good. Hopefully I won't get shot tomorrow. for wearing a USSR Air Force Commander uniform. I put it all on last night and walked in, and my wife kind of looked at me and her eyes got wide. She said, okay, just give me a minute. Because it's all authentic. I mean, it's, you know, it is the thing. What I haven't done is I haven't made a name tag because I can't find a place on the uniform to make a name tag because of the way the lapels are and the way the medals are hung on it. I do have medals. So either I'm just not going to worry about the name tag, or we'll see. I don't know. We have small group tonight, so I won't have much time to do anything if I do anything. We'll just see how all that goes. I suspect I might not do anything, but who knows? I might get adventurous in the last hour of the day and try something. We'll see. So yeah, all is well. I had actually had some notes for last week, but in the process of talking about Petrov Day last week, I kind of got done, and having arrived home and needing to turn around and get back in to get Aiden, I didn't get to these notes, and I don't want to be accusatory in this discussion, but I think this really accurately reflects kind of the crux of the problem that we're facing right now in what Brent Weinstein and Heather Hain might call the Cartesian crisis. And that is, how do you know what you know, and how do we establish meaning when there's so many different conflicting sources about things? And especially since everyone seems so sure of what they know. I mean, they're just so sure. So this does actually come from a podcast that Brent Weinstein and Heather Hain did. And it was about the hearings that were being held by Ron Johnson, Senator Ron Johnson, on child vaccines and their safety and health implications, those sorts of things. You may or may not know, but one of the big accusations, I'm going to get a drink, one moment. One of the big accusations that is leveled by those who would like to see better studies done on childhood vaccines are the fact that they have not been tested against placebos. So they claim there's been no placebo-controlled trials to show the benefits of childhood vaccines. All they claim has really been done is they inject these vaccines, they say, see, there's a response of the body to these vaccines, therefore we need to put it on the child safety, you know, the child vaccine schedule, and then as soon as it gets on there, then the justification is, well, it's on the child vaccine schedule, so, I mean, it would be unethical to do a study with placebos on here, because obviously it's on the schedule because children need this. So it's this circular reasoning of, we're going to ramrod it through to get it on the schedule, and then once it's on the schedule, that will be a self-propagating justification for why we just have to keep giving this to kids because it's a safety issue. And so there are people who I think rightly have raised a flag and said, don't you think we should do some experimentation to see if these things are really doing what we claim they're doing? And what is the effect of stacking these vaccines more and more and more and more, to where I think the latest count I had was like 80 childhood vaccines are on the schedule now. You know, including things like hepatitis B, which is a sexually transmitted disease that's given to newborns, even though their moms have already been tested for hep B. And even if the mom is negative for Hep B, they still give the shot to the child? I mean, it's like, wait. What are the side effects of this? Well, there are no side effects. It's on the childhood schedule. It's a safety issue. So, in particular, one of the things that was fascinating about this is a response to this particular accusation that things had not been tested against placebo. So I'm looking through the notes here to see if it's in here, and if it isn't, I will just make up the number. Okay. So one of the people that testified before this commission was a Dr. Scott, and he came out and he testified that this accusation that the childhood vaccines had not been tested against inert placebos, and that word inert is very, very important, inert placebos, he came out and he said that is categorically false, because he said there are 661 inert controlled trials to support the safety of routine injective childhood vaccines. He made that statement flat out, that there were 661 inert control trials to support the safety of the routine injective childhood vaccines. Just flat out said it with ultimate confidence, and then said it, you know, basically it was ridiculous that people were making this claim that they had never been tested against placebos. Okay, great. So then they turned then they turned it over to a guy named Aaron Seary, and they said, would you like to respond to that? And his response was, he said, actually, I think Dr. Scott has done a great service in terms of pointing out the lack of clinical trials supporting the safety of routine injective childhood vaccines. Now you're like, what? He didn't say that. He said that there's 661 trials. And he says, well, let me give you a breakdown of those 661 trials. So he said, first of all, 567 of those trials were not a routine injective for childhood vaccines that are on the CDC childhood schedule. They were for HI vaccines or other vaccines. So they're totally irrelevant to the routine injective childhood vaccines. Then he said, of the remaining 94 studies, 70 of them did not involve healthy children. He said, for example, trials of HIV-positive adults. In other words, completely irrelevant to the safety of childhood vaccines. He said, of the remaining 24, 21 did not involve a U.S.-licensed vaccine or was a vaccine or was not a vaccine that was just a control to license as currently used vaccines. He said, for instance, he said the Chinese flu shots were in there, stuff like that. So basically, these studies, if they were done with actually inert controls, didn't have anything to do with the shots we're actually giving to the kids. So he said, and of the remaining three that were claimed to have an inert control, he said they didn't. So some of them, I think they were saying they were either underpowered or they were actually injecting the children who weren't getting the vaccine with like aluminum, which is one of the main problems with the vaccines. So, you know, basically you start out with 661 as a flat-out claim that this is what they are and this is why they're safe because they've been tested against all this stuff. And you start whittling it away by looking at what was actually done in it, and you find that this huge amount of trials that were compiled, that were listed as, see, this shows that the childhood vaccines are safe, have nothing to do with childhood vaccines. And yet, this Dr. Scott confidently proclaims in front of Congress that, in fact, this is the proof that the childhood vaccines are safe. This kind of thing just fascinates me. It just fascinates me. Because what, you know, this expert, is he so used to being called an expert and so confident in what he spouts or what someone else gives him to spout, is he so confident of it that he doesn't think anyone is going to look at the numbers? Now, is Aaron Seary lying about these things? I mean, I have heard people commenting on these numbers, people who would be the type of people who would go check up and double check this stuff. And it seems like those people are agreeing with Aaron Seary that, yeah, this is all just like a smokescreen. That this expert came in and he just confidently repeated what he was told to repeat, when in fact there's nothing there. Now, the problem is this person from one side of this discussion is going to confidently proclaim this. And for the people who want to believe that side of the discussion, they're just going to shut down at that point, and they're going to say, oh, see, there's 661 trials. Of course they've been tested against placebo. And if anyone says anything, they're just ignorant. So it's been tested. He said it was tested. They've been tested against placebo. They're safe. And that'll be the end of the discussion. And you could actually take those people through the data. You could show them, not a childhood vaccine, not a childhood vaccine, not a childhood vaccine, and they wouldn't care. They would just say, nope, there's 661. They'll just parrot it, and it's just done. Likewise, on the other side of the equation, I haven't gone and checked out whether those 661 were actually childhood vaccines. So I don't have any idea whether Aaron Seary is just lying about it. There was a time when you assumed that experts would, in fact, be careful about the things that they were saying and would make sure that they were being truthful so that they would not be embarrassed later. I think we've passed that time. I can't see that the experts are showing any indication any longer that they're concerned at all. If someone calls them out for something and say, you know, no, you were inaccurate there. No, I'm not. That's well, they would get the response that my mom used to give me when I was trying to make a point and I just had her pinned down to where there was nothing she could say that would not make my point. And she'd just look at me and she'd say, nope, I'm right. And then that would be the end of the discussion. Nope, I'm right. And it feels like we're very much in that time. And it feels like that across science, we're in this time when everyone is just going to bend the data to make it say anything they want to. Now, I will tell you, this is not unfamiliar to me. I grew up in Asia. And in Asia, people would confidently bend the data to whatever they wanted it to say. I have mentioned this before, but many years ago, 20 years ago, there was a drug company in India that was just doing a spectacular job of producing drugs at a really low cost, and you looked at all of their charts for testing for purity, and everything was great. It was amazing. And I would just grin when people would talk about how that this company was just doing an incredible job producing these high-quality drugs for this low price, and they had all the charts that proved it, until someone in the States actually started taking their drugs and testing them. And they didn't have anything with it, you know, anywhere near the purity that they claimed they were. And everybody shocked. And they went back to the original drug companies and said, these are our testing results. Why are yours so, well, you know, you wanted the data to show it was really pure before you would allow us to sell it in the United States. So we manufactured data to show that it was very pure because the goal was to sell this really cheap in the States and make money. The goal wasn't to be honest and truthful and moral. The goal was to sell the drugs and make money. And honestly, this is one of the things that I consider to be a side effect of deciding that we didn't need quote-unquote religion, quote-unquote belief in God, quote-unquote moral authorities involved in our society because science would just give us the answers for everything. The problem is science cannot exist without a moral framework because there's multiple sides to science. There is supposedly the pursuit of the truth, but there is also the monetization side of science. And that monetization side can inconveniently be disrupted if you are only pursuing the truth. And so what happens instead is there can be studies done that are then ignored because they are not convenient. And then there can be studies done where the data is fudged. And then there can be studies done that are constructed in such a way to get a specific outcome that is not a truthful outcome. It is a convenient outcome so that we can sell things. But in all those things, the primary driver becomes power, control, and money because there's no moral framework. And truth dies in those situations. So we thought we could just kick God out of our surroundings and the wonderful science would keep going. And we didn't realize that the reason that science was able to deliver everything that it had delivered up to that point was because the scientists who were working had some concept of morality that you should tell the truth. And you should tell the truth even if it costs you perhaps your reputation, some of your reputation cost you money, all that has gone out the window. And so all that's important is for me to say whatever I can say that will bolster my reputation and make me money. And so you get people who are just making these claims, staring right at you, possibly even believing those claims and refusing to hear anything else. Because if the claims aren't true, they aren't going to make as much money. They won't have as much power. They won't have as much control. You know, pick whatever result you want. And so they just refuse to hear anything else. I don't know if what I'm about to tell you is true or not, but I did find articles on it and I did read through it. What is really interesting is apparently there was a CDC study that did specifically look at vaxxed versus unvaxxed children. It was supposedly carried out by the Henry Ford Clinic, which is an entity that favors vaccines. And it was not published, apparently, because it came out with a very indicative number of chronic conditions that were clearly caused in the vaccine-treated group and not in the unvaccinated group. So, you know, here's a situation, and you can go look it up and read through it. You know, here's a situation where the Henry Ford Health Clinic in Detroit set out to reinforce the message that the science on vaccine was settled. And their goal was to, quote, reassure parents of the overall safety of vaccination. Tracking over 18,000 children, this is just what the article said, so I can't verify the veracity of this. But according to the article, tracking over 18,000 children, the study showed higher chronic illness among the vaccinated than the unvaccinated. At the 10-year mark, 57% of the vaccinated children had at least one chronic condition. For unvaccinated children, it was 17%. So, this is the problem that we're into. You know, we don't need a moral framework because we can do our science, but our science needs a moral framework. And without it, our science is no good. It's simply an engine to grant people more money, power, and control. And that's really why the saying now is science progresses one funeral at a time, because you get a power structure built around a certain interpretation of events, and that power structure is going to choke down on any variance within the theories. And it's only when the old patriarchs of that particular theory group die off do you get the chance to have someone to come up and say, I don't think that's quite right. Anyways, we live in fascinating times. And again, it was really lovely. It was lovely to meet Ken and Joy this past week. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.